Everybody, good morning to everyone. The first case for the morning is number 043155, and it's hearing against the City of Chicago. Mr. Ehrlich.
May it please the Court, Counsel. The plaintiff worked for the City of Chicago since 1991, received very good evaluations, was promoted twice between 1981 and 1992. Since 1992, he began making numerous complaints of illegal activity going on at Mayfair, as well as making complaints about political favoritism. The district court ruled and defendant agreed that these were all entitled to First Amendment protection, so that's not really an issue on appeal. Since the plaintiff made these complaints, these many complaints, he encountered a continuous series of retaliatory acts throughout his career. These included being passed over 15 times on promotions, being threatened with violence, having his schedule abruptly changed, suspended.
Mr. Ehrlich,
the problem with the panels is one of the issues I wanted to focus on. And there was actually three issues I wanted to focus on. Two are very much linked to your question. One was Francis Blake's involvement or non-involvement, depending on the court's ruling, in the interview process, ranking process, and then the reliance on the interview process as a complete bar, as defendant argued and as the court ruled, to any retaliatory actions. It was Blake, who there's no dispute, knew about all the complaints being made on a frequent basis, who selected who would be the interviewers on each of these promotions. It was Blake who decided what questions would be asked by the interviewers. It was Blake who then summarized and reviews those interview scores of the people he handpicked to do the interviews. It was Blake who then made the recommendations to the commissioners who he thought should be selected.
What kind of raw material did Blake receive from the interviewers? Was it simply a score? Or was it simply anything?
Notes came from the interviewer.
And notes, you say?
I believe so. As the questions were asked.
In what way was he able to exercise any subjective judgment in what he included or did not include in what went to the commissioner?
If you go to his statement that he made to Mr. Healy in January of 2000, it was very clearly stated in the briefs, decisions come from the top down, not from the bottom up. And he also told Mr. Healy very specifically they didn't like him speaking out too clearly. They did not like...
It doesn't really answer the question, though.
That, I think, makes clear evidence what Blake did at the time.
What was Blake able to do?
He was able to change the numbers. He was able to do whatever he wanted. And then tell
us. Is there any evidence he changed the numbers?
No, we do not. We do not have direct evidence that he changed it. But
you didn't depose.
That was a different attorney.
But
you're correct. But you are correct. Yes. That evidence would have been slam dunk, but I think given the other statements being made and what's been going on currently in the City of Chicago, if you stick to the rule about reasonable inferences, there was enough to raise that issue. It's the defendant's burden to prove.
It's purely speculative.
No. I don't believe they are.
So he summarized interviews notes. Were there notes taken at the interview that were part of the decision-making process?
questions will be answered, notes will be taken, and then numerical scores based on those answers. That all went into
Blake. But did Blake do something with the interviewer's notes?
I can't tell you that Blake changed a note or not. There was no one in the room at the time when he went through that. But I can tell you from Blake's own admission, he's doing what he's told from higher up. He doesn't share what the interviewer said.
Now, there's one other matter with respect to these questions I need to ask you. Is there any evidence in the record that the questions were mandated by a regulation, by a directive from the commissioner, that those questions were the ones to be asked and only those questions?
I think the testimony from Tom Special, I may be mistaken, but I think it was Tom Special, or it may have been Blake, who said we had 12 standard questions that were asked, and it was the quote was something along the lines of, we pretty much stuck to that, I think, were the words.
Was that buzzed by mandate, by custom?
It wasn't a rule, it wasn't a law, but it was an admission, essentially, that 12 questions are being asked. These are the questions we asked. We stuck to the script. We asked these same questions of each candidate. That part is in the record.
We don't know why.
No, we don't know why. I mean, there's nothing that says, I don't think, says why. I mean, usually they try to be...
That may be crucial under our case law. That's why I ask.
It's not the questions by themselves that are the issue. It's more in terms of how those got interpreted to and through Mr. Blake, who then made his recommendation to the commissioners, who admitted that we always follow Blake's recommendations. And the questions could have been anything. Now, we know for sure that the questions, the 12 questions from Mr. Healy's deposition and affidavit, those were not asked of Mr. Healy. He referred to questions such as, oh, so how's so-and-so doing, and how's the weather today? This was not simply small talk, making Mr. Healy at ease before the interview questions. Mr. Healy stated in the affidavit, of the 12 questions that were supposed to be asked of everybody, 7 of those were not asked of him. Instead, he was asked these irrelevant questions.
But there's nothing in the record to show that the interviewers acted any way differently with respect to the other candidates. Is that correct?
From Mr. Healy's perspective, yes, there is. The interviewers, Special and Blake, indicated that, you know, here are the 12 questions, we stick to the script, we ask these questions. Healy, and we take that at face value, Healy's saying, I didn't get those 12 questions, I get some ridiculous questions.
The lack of evidence.
We don't have the evidence of other people's interviews. We accept at face value what Special said and what Blake said, that the questions are set, those are the questions that are supposed to be asked. That wasn't the case with Healy. Whatever the other interviewers asked or did not ask, the buck still stopped at Blake, who then could do, and it stated that he would do whatever needed to be done because decisions came from the top. Bottom down, top, the bottom up, made no difference to him, as he admitted. He made the decision based on what was being told to him to do. He's the one that told the commissioner, I recommend this person, I recommend that person. There was not a separate grading process to cross-reference that and see, well, I don't know, he recommended this guy, but what about this guy? That wasn't done. The commissioners and the defendants admit what was recommended or who was recommended for the promotion, commissioners accepted. If you ignore Healy's version of the interview, and if you ignore Mr. Blake's clear statement that he's making the decision, he doesn't care what the interviewers say, you would have to go with that. But I don't think we can do that on summary judgment. And not to forget that the burden of proof when it comes to this interview process is on the defendant. They're arguing... Yes. It's not simply a number. It's also summary of notes and recommendations. The evidence I rely on mostly for that.
Anything else?
I think that's a very strong statement, but yes, you're correct. That covers two of the issues I was going to raise. The other issue I wanted to raise was the district court's finding that there was no evidence that Commissioner Judith Rice had any knowledge about complaints of improprieties and theft going on at Mayfair. Mr. Healy stated very specifically in his affidavit at paragraph 67-68 that during a 20-minute meeting with Commissioner Rice in either late January or early February of 1999, he told Ms. Rice very specifically about his complaints of theft and sabotage at Mayfair. At best, Commissioner Rice's vague recollections of what that meeting was or was not simply raised an issue of fact. Said late January or February 1999, Mr. Healy said that he scheduled the meeting in advance with the secretary, asked that the secretary have his personnel file to be present at that meeting, and in the affidavit he states, I walked into the meeting with Rice and there sat my personnel file. Mr. Healy applied for a promotion again in either September or October of 1999. Didn't get that position. The ultimate final notice of not getting that came in 2000, but that process started in September, October 1999, when Rice was still there.
And when did she leave?
She left, I think, at the end of 99.
Is there any evidence that she acted on that promotion?
No. I see I'm into my rebuttal, so unless there's further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ehrlich. From Ms. Hunsford.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Mr. Healy complains that he was not selected on five occasions between 1998 and 2000 for promotions in the water department. Over the course of these bids, he was evaluated by 11 different interviewers sitting in three-person panels, and each time he competed against many candidates for a much smaller number of positions.
Can you explain to us who those people were and how they were selected for their various panels?
Certainly. You're referring to the interviewers?
That's correct.
The interviewers tended to be supervisors from various divisions of the Water Department, and in the five promotions at issue here, and this is actually...
Are there any regulations as to who they should be? That the interviewers would be selected from a particular group of employees or anything of that nature?
I'm not aware of any such requirements in the record. What is in the record is that the one of the assistant commissioners for the Department of Water, if a bid came up, she would ask the deputy in charge of the area that was being covered to conduct the interviews. Now, what I'd like to point out is that there were five of these promotions at issue. Only two of these actually were in the Bureau of Water Pumping, over which Mr. Deputy Commissioner Blake had supervisory authority. Three of the others actually, the Assistant Commissioner of the Water Department had asked the Deputy in Charge of Water Treatment, Claude Wilson, to conduct the interviews.
Those people answered to Mr. Blake?
I'm sorry?
Did those people answer to Blake?
No, Your Honor. They were they're sort of different.
Different chain of command.
As far as I understand, it was a different chain of command, and there's no evidence in the record that Deputy Commissioner Blake was involved in the interview process for, I believe, the first of these interview processes.
What does the evidence show about his selection of the panelists? On any particular occasion, did he have any control? To what extent, if any, did he control that process?
You're referring to Mr. Blake?
Deputy Commissioner Blake.
Deputy Commissioner Blake testified in his deposition that when he was asked to assemble the panels for the interviews, And he doesn't really state anything about what criteria he used in selecting people, or if he was under any, you know, regulation that told him who to pick for it. The people tended to be people in the position of chief assistant or chief operating engineer at the pumping stations or assistant chief, people sort of at and above the level for which the positions that, that Mr. Healy and others were interviewing for. And, you know, each of these interviews, he competed against many people. From the fact that he was never selected as one of the top few candidates, Mr. Healy discerns that the reason must be because he had previously complained about illegal activities by other water department employees. But in order to survive summary judgment, Mr. Healy needed more than that belief. He needed evidence to show retaliation was a factor in his decisions, and he needed to show either that an individual named defendant or a city policy was responsible for the retaliation. He adduced evidence of neither, and the district court properly entered summary judgment for the city. Now, Mr. Healy first named six individuals in addition to the city as defendants to his claims. Most of those defendants and many of his claims have either been dismissed or abandoned. So at this point, he is only in his appeal pressing his First Amendment retaliation claim against former Water Commissioner Judith Rice, former Deputy Commissioner Blake, and the city. And he simply fails to tie the retaliation he alleges to any of these defendants.
But what about this September 1999 promotion that Mr. Earle just referred to?
Your Honor, with regard to Commissioner Rice, there is simply, that assertion is simply unsupported in the record that there was an interview in 1999.
After the encounter, whatever it may have been, in the hall or meeting or what have you, with Judith Rice.
The source that Mr. Healy points to for that in his reply brief is his deposition testimony. His testimony, I would actually quote this, he says, he was asked, you know, when his next interview was after meeting with the commissioner. He said, I would say maybe in the fall of that year, maybe like September or October. So the answer itself makes clear that he was merely guessing. There's no documentation at all in the record that any interview took place during that period. In fact, what the record discloses is that the next bid went out in April of 2000, by which time Richard Rice had become the commissioner of the Water Department in
Are the Rices related, or is this just a coincidence?
I don't believe that they are related. I think it's, but I actually
do not know. Interesting.
The briefing a little bit confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And with regard to Commissioner Rice, of course, as we've established, he only brought his complaints to her attention after she had made the decisions at issue. As far as making the ultimate decision, she merely approved the panel's recommendations at each point. There's no evidence that she was aware, if there was any bias that infected those ratings, that she was aware of that. And of course, he doesn't even purport to have created an issue of fact about whether Judith Rice took any retaliatory action against him. He's merely saying there's an issue of fact about whether she knew about his activities before she made any decisions. It's clear that she did not, but in any event, that would not be enough. And with regard to Deputy Commissioner Brooke Blake, of course, as I've mentioned, he was only actually involved in the way that Mr. Healy has described in two of the five promotion decisions at issue. But with
mm-hmm. Blake, Francis Blake?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
That's correct. It was Claude Wilson, the deputy in water treatment, who had handled the others. There's no evidence of Blake being involved in those. But even as to the two interview processes he was involved in, Deputy Commissioner Blake did not have a hand in the decisions. He did select the interview panels, but there's no evidence that he influenced those panels, that he told them, you know, to stack the deck, basically, against Mr. Healy.
Are those notes and interview score sheets, or whatever they should be called, normally retained by the city, and did anybody ask for them in discovery?
I don't know why. I don't know if anybody asked for them in discovery. I don't believe that what was retained was the questions that the interviewers were always asked to retain the questions and pass them on, and to forward their sort of raw numerical scores. My understanding is that they would give each of their numbers to Blake, and Blake would add them up. But there aren't any. I think any notes about what was written down were just the interviewers' own.
I may ask you questions. I asked counsel for the appellant. Did Mr. Blake have summarized notes as well as numerical scores?
There's no indication of that in the record that he would have. It sounds as though he just, you know, he he said to the commissioner, this is what the panel recommends, I concur, here are their scores.
Now, with respect to these questions, apparently there was a set of stock questions that were usually asked. Were those questions required to be asked by some directive, or was that simply a custom?
I believe it was simply a custom, but actually to say that there was a stock questions always asked at each interview isn't really the right way to describe this. What the city had put forward, what the city had retained in each of these cases were the list of questions that were asked in each instance. There was a lot of overlap because you're going to ask the same questions for these same interviews over and over again, but the interviewers themselves or Deputy Commissioner Blake would, you know, pick this particular list. And so in some cases, in August of 1998, there were nine questions. In June 2000, there were 13. In July 2000, there were 12. And in fact, when Mr. Healy claims that this whole process was a sham because he wasn't asked the questions that, you know, the city produced the list of questions, what he actually said was, here are these nine questions. I was not asked four of them. So he was asked the other five, and you have to keep in mind what these questions are is they are open-ended questions, you know, aimed at evaluating the, you know, describe your experience, what you'll bring to the position, open-ended questions, and these interviews have been described as 20, 30-minute periods of time. So it's not by any means surprising.
What did Blake tell the interviewers about these questions? Did Blake tell them you must ask these questions, you must ask some of them, you must ask all of them? Did he give any direction as to how these questions were to be used?
There's nothing in the record about what Blake told the interviewer, which questions to use. And, you know, in some instances, if there were, you know, there were 13 questions in one instance, Mr. Healy was asked seven of them. It's not at all surprising that the interviewers, in the constraints of time, you know, would sort of streamline some of the questions, would skip over some of them, because you're simply not going to be able to fit all those in. And, of course, what Mr. Healy nowhere demonstrates is that in every other candidate's interview, they actually fit 13 open-ended questions into a 30-minute interview. Of course, Mr. Healy had any evidence in this case that Deputy Commissioner Blake had stacked the deck against him in this way. Mr. Blake could be liable, but he, you know, even if there was any sort of problem with the way the interviews were conducted, it's clear he didn't have any, he didn't use his influence to retaliate against him. And in fact, you know, Mr. Healy's theory that Deputy Commissioner Blake retaliated against him really overlooks that there's not actually any evidence in the record that Deputy Commissioner Blake bore Mr. Healy any ill will. By Mr. Healy's own account, the two were friendly, they got along well. Mr. Blake, of course, in contrast to Commissioner Rice, knew about Healy's complaints, he knew Healy well, but there was nothing that, you know, suggesting he had bias against him. And of course, there, in addition to the fact that, you know, these interviews clearly were conducted with substantive questions, there's nothing in the record save Mr. Healy's speculation that his interviews scores were the product of any kind of organized effort to retaliate against him. Mr. Healy apparently feels he was more qualified than all the other candidates who were promoted over him, but there's every indication that the interviewers who evaluated him simply disagreed with Mr. Healy's assessment of his own qualifications. Furthermore, Mr. Healy failed to establish any causal link between any municipal policy or custom and the decision not to promote him. Beyond the lack of any evidence to show that his rights were violated at all, Mr. Healy has not established that any action was taken against him by a person with final policymaking authority on behalf of the city. Nor does Mr. Healy even claim to have provided any evidence of such a widespread pattern of retaliation against employees who make complaints about corruption that municipal policymakers should have known of its existence.
The ultimate decision maker here, you're saying, is the department itself? Or Commissioner Rice?
The ultimate decision maker about whom to promote in each of these instances is the Commissioner of the Water Department.
But in a Monell sense, in terms of policy, are you agreeing that it's the Commissioner of the Water Department, or is it institutionally the department?
The Commissioner of the Water Department has the authority to decide whom to hire, but they do not have the authority to depart from the city's personnel policies, which, of course, would prohibit this kind of. So the ultimate authority on that is the Commissioner of the Department of Personnel and ultimately the City Council that sets the city's
That's the city's policy.
Mm-hmm. And just one more point about the interview. Of course, Mr. Healy's counsel mentioned that there's a burden on the defendant, on the city in this case, to show that the decision would have been reached if the that we would have reached the same decision anyway. But of course, that burden only falls on the defendant if the plaintiff establishes that his speech was a motivating factor in the decision in the first place. And Mr. Healy has not even come close to satisfying that burden. And because Mr. Healy's been unable to make any showing that either Commissioner Judith Rice, Deputy Commissioner Blake, or the city was actually responsible for any retaliation against him, he has no basis to assert his claims under Section 1983. We ask that the judgment of the circuit of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hunister. You have 2 minutes.
Just one point. With respect to what the relationship was or was not between Mr. Blake and the plaintiff, it should not be overlooked that Blake was the COE or Chief Operating Engineer at Mayfair when many of the complaints were being made. And the fact that Mr. Healy felt comfortable in telling these complaints to Mr. Blake does not mean Blake did not retaliate, as I think the evidence shows. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.